This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Take this woman as your lawful wedded wife.
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring, I thee wed.
Hello, Place to Be Nation, and welcome to Edition 6. Of the With This Ring podcast. I'm your co-host, Ryan Everett.
I'm Cindy Everett.
And today what we have is a special, originally it was going to be two parts, but since it is WrestleMania season and WrestleMania is known for being bloated and as long as possible, we're going to have the podcast follow that.
That's template. Not a very complimentary way of saying it.
Well, it's bigger.
It's bigger
than usual.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to do. And we are going to look at two separate batches of matches, but they're related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
First, we'll look at matches that happened at WrestleMania, and then follow that up by looking at those same matches, the follow-up, though, to them.
Leaving the same guys.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. And to peel back the curtain a little bit, we recorded the first part about a week ago before the list was due, and now we're recording the second part after the list has been submitted.
A decade later,
yes. After the list has been submitted, so I'll be able to give some actual concrete answers as to
if I rank matches rankings.
And I actually rank these matches.
Why didn't you share your Google Sheet with me?
I could, if you really want it.
No, that's true. I wouldn't really take the time to look at it. But yeah. Interested to see everything. I like being surprised when you tell me.
Yeah, so it'll be surprising.
Was there any surprises when you were doing it that you thought would come in higher or lower?
100 wasn't as many as I thought it would be.
Real? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
There were a lot of tough. It could have been 150 pretty easily.
Okay.
And there were a lot of tough cuts. But we'll get to that as we go along. But here we go with. So the first match we chose was March 29th, 1987, WrestleMania 3, which drew somewhere around 90, at least 75,000 to 93,000 people.
Yeah, a little bit of a wide margin there, like we discussed in the past episode.
Yes, yes. But this was the main event that did, at the very least, sell it out.
Really? Is this what put asses in the
yes,
seats?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. This was, in WWE lore, this was the first time Andre the Giant was undefeated.
Okay.
And Hulk Hogan had been champ for 3 years now.
Was this the Unstoppable Force versus the
Immovable Object?
Yes. Okay.
The Great Gorilla Monsoon calls it.
Gotcha. Well, I gotta say, not to jump ahead, but this is one of my least favorite of the week.
Well, yeah, this match in the list is going to be like probably the most divisive.
It's the most hyped, but it's like the least, I don't know, how to like, it doesn't live up to the hype in my mind
right.
in terms
well,
of quality.
Yeah, I could see that. Because it's definitely, especially if you've seen matches from like 2016.
Well, no, even like I said, after we finished watching this to you, I'm like, that match was nowhere near as good as the Macho Man Ricky
Steamboat. That's true, yeah.
Which is the same paper, which is the same event.
That is true, yes.
Like even within the event, not even like across time, like in the event.
At that show itself.
If you're like me and you don't know any of the lead up, this is not a fun match to watch. It's boring.
So the lead up, as it were, was
kind of shit all over it already.
So. No, that's fine. That's good. At the beginning of 1987, Roddy Piper had his show Piper's Pit.
Like a show within a show, you mean?
Yeah, like an
show?
Interview segment.
Yeah.
Week. They showed like this in a clip form, but like they only showed like 10 seconds of each clip, so it was very quick. So the first week, Hulk Hogan gets his big trophy because he's been champion for 3 years. And at the end, Andre the Giant comes out and congratulates him. But it was kind of like, what's Andre the Giant doing out here? Because him and Hulk were friends at the time.
Sure.
So then the next week, Andre the Giant's given a trophy that's a lot smaller for being undefeated for 15 years.
Mm.
And then Hulk Hogan has to come out and congratulate him. And while Hulk Hogan's talking about how great his friend Andre the Giant is, Andre the Giant just walks off. He wants nothing of this anymore. So then the next week, Jesse Ventura comes out, the announcer, the governor.
Obviously. Well, wait, what was he the governor of Minnesota?
Like 1998.
Okay, I knew it was obviously after. I couldn't remember how long after.
Yeah. So he comes out and says that he has a challenge for Hulk Hogan. If Piper can get Hogan out here the next week, he has someone who wants to challenge him. So then the next week on Piper's Pit, so they did this like 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay, it's pretty protracted.
To make it come out. And Hulk Hogan comes out onto Piper's Pit, and then Bobby the Brain Heenan walks out with Andre the Giant. And Andre the Giant was a good guy at the time, and he's shown with Bobby the Brain Heenan, who's like the biggest heel manager of the group.
Okay. Did Bobby the Heenan ever wrestle, or was he just a manager?
He wrestled like occasionally, but it was always like
gotcha.
A 3-on-2 match or something, or like if so and so loses, they get 5 minutes alone.
So he was like a Paul Heyman of the 80s type character?
Yeah.
Okay, that helps.
Yeah, that would be a good comparison.
Look at me, I'm learning all these terms and analogies.
So Andre the Giant challenges Hulk Hogan to a match. I'm ready to drink. And then he rips off Hogan's shirt and the cross around Hulk Hogan's neck.
Oh, uh-oh.
Which ended up, because Andre the Giant's hand is so large, he ended up cutting Hulk Hogan's chest open.
Wow.
Like, just a little tiny bit. But Roddy Piper, so Andre the Giant walks off, and Roddy Piper's helping Hogan up, and he goes, you're bleeding. So then, like, Piper says, will you fight him at WrestleMania 3? Hogan says, yes. They show the crowd going crazy.
Oh, yeah.
The one guy was, like, jumping up and down out of his chair.
Can you make a supercut of all the best wrestler reactions? Because between But you could probably, you know, pick.
Yeah.
Like, you know, even top 10. Do, like, a quick, like,
the Undertaker cuts. Loses guy.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure someone's already done it multiple times.
Yeah, probably. But. So
I think you'd make a good one.
And then this was back in the time when WrestleMania didn't go on sale in November. Like, the tickets for this went on sale the week after they announced
that
this was
going to
be the main event. So
that was smart.
Everyone, I mean, you have Detroit, Toronto is still pretty close. So both of those big markets. And then, I mean, this wasn't in the time when people would travel for a vacation to WrestleMania.
But really? Well, 93,000 people.
Yeah, so everybody might have been.
What's the population of Detroit?
It's over 1 million.
Is it?
Well,
no.
Back then, the late 80s, early 90s was tough on Detroit. But
it was, but no, I don't. Well, as we know from trivia, we're not good at estimating the size of cities.
You aren't.
You're not either.
I wasn't there at the time.
Oh, you're right. Okay. We'll see Detroit. Because usually on Wikipedia pages, they'll have, like, the census history. You probably might be able to find it before I do.
Let's see. Detroit, Michigan.
And it's more than 93,000 people. That's,
well, yeah.
Give you that.
Well, yeah. Naperville has more than that.
That's true. 700, well, the most recent estimate on Wikipedia is 600, let's just say 700,000 people.
Yeah. Okay.
It's still a lot of people from Michigan.
Michigan and Canada.
Yeah, Toronto's not that close to
Detroit. It's like 2.5 hours.
Right. Okay, well, unless somebody took a poll of who was there,
yeah.
I think we're going to keep arguing about it.
Yeah. So, the match itself, it's hyped very well, though, because
that's true.
It was, like, from 1984, Hulk Hogan was the champ and had beaten everyone he fought against. And Andre the Giant was always like the secondary guy on the card, just beating usually other big guys.
Yeah, I could see that.
So the match itself is not a technical masterpiece, as you were saying.
No, it's not.
It is not long. Even.
No.
It is. How long do you think it was?
I think it was like 8 minutes?
Oh, no. 12 minutes.
Okay.
It's the second longest match on WrestleMania 3.
After the Macho Man one?
Yeah. And even that match is 14 minutes.
Okay.
So they had 12 matches and only two of them went over 10 minutes.
What was the Andre the Giant? What was Andre the Giant's longest match? Type points, you think? Just him, not in like a tag team situation.
I mean, this was like towards the end of, because he kind of thought about retiring in 1986.
Oh, okay.
And that's like when he did the Princess Bride and stuff, and then
pivoting to the first wrestler to pivot to acting.
Yes,
but not the last.
No, certainly not. And then Vince McMahon found out that he was going to be able to book the Silver Dome, and he knew he needed a big time role, so he like basically offered Andre the Giant whatever he wanted, and Andre the Giant needed a back surgery.
Oh wow!
And that's when the anesthesiologist had to find out how to. He had never done drugs to someone as big as Andre the Giant, so they basically asked him how long it took him to get drunk, and he said it takes him two jars of wine to start feeling a little funny. So using that, they were able to figure out how to give him anesthesia and make sure he didn't wake up during the middle of back surgery or die.
Right, that's a fine line you need to walk there.
They were able to figure it out.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
And they use that with large people to this day.
They make him get drunk?
No, they kind of figure out the formula that way, supposedly.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if we can really verify that with any anesthesiologist. Well, we know people who know anesthesiologists.
Yeah, we could check it. The Andre the Giant story is true. So it starts, and right away Hulk Hogan goes for the body
slam.
Tries
to pick him up.
And falls, and the ref almost counts three. So they kind of say that he messed up and counted to three.
Oh, really?
Just to kind of give it an out afterwards, because obviously you're going to do this rematch again and again. And
if you want to sell... presumably get 93,000 people there. You're not going to be the only match. Time they fight.
So then the rest of the, most of the match is just Andre the Giant in control.
Right.
Yeah, from that point on, he doesn't really take that much offense. Eventually they go to the outside and Hulk Hogan tries to pile drive him on the floor at one point.
That doesn't work. Yeah.
And Andre the Giant just flips him over.
There's a lot of I remember like being a long bear hug.
There's a bear hug. Like bear hugging. Yeah, yeah. Well, Andre the Giant's a big man, so
he can squeeze
the life
people
out of him.
Right, right.
And then they get back in the ring, and eventually Hulk Hogan hits, I think, two clotheslines, and that knocks him down, Andre the Giant. And that's like a huge
deal.
And
that's when he, and then he gets the body
then
slam.
Then he gets the body slam, and the leg drop and the three count. And according to Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant was closer to about 800 pounds that day, not the 525 he's announced at.
Why does he say that?
Well, because Hulk Hogan kind of inflates everything as the years have gone by.
Oh,
he says
okay.
He tore every muscle in his back.
So he's just like
him. And he says Andre the Giant died shortly after WrestleMania 3.
I should stop letting him speak in public.
Yeah, that would probably be a good idea.
He's back on the network, though, isn't he, kind of?
Yeah, he shows up more and more, mainly in the Saudi Arabia shows because you know, they're not going to...
He can stay over there.
Yeah, they're not going to look down on him for his comments.
That's true.
On race relations.
Right, yeah, that's a different
They probably
want to
know how he thinks about women in the workplace. So you're not a fan of the match?
No.
Okay. I can see that, but...
I said right away, I said to you, and I put my notes, not as good as the Steamboat Macho match from the same event.
Yes, I definitely would agree with that, but I think this is one of those matches that you can't just...
Look at in a vacuum.
Or if you look at it in a vacuum, you got to look at it in the vacuum of just this show, and like...
It's not even the good in the...
It's not the good on the show, but if there wasn't that match, that many people aren't going to be there. For that show.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like you could make an argument it's the most important match in WWF history.
The most hyped match.
Hyped and important. Like biggest drawing match of all time. That is kind of undisputed. Like, because the WrestleMania 32 was a bigger audience, but that was by the point where WrestleMania tickets go on sale in November. You'll show up. It doesn't matter who's wrestling. People weren't showing up because Roman Reigns was facing Triple H.
They weren't?
No. I mean, but this was a show where it's Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. So, like, some people have said it's going to be their number one.
Really?
Yeah. Some people say it has to be in your top, like, 10.
Well, I'm not doing a list, but I disagree with those people.
Right now, I have it at 50.
Okay.
I think that's, like, a good spot where I'm recognizing the history of it, but also not overinflating it because the actual match quality...
Yeah.
Let me put it higher than that.
Right. I think we already talked about this, like just kind of using your criteria.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's different ways to interpret. Like, some people might not have it on there at all because they could say, like, well, it's a crappy match.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time,
it has a low technical score, but a high cultural score.
Right. Yes. And it's one of those matches that, like, in the 80s, even if you didn't know wrestling, it was kind of, this was a match that you might have heard about. It was in sports papers the next day and stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, it was a big deal, even though just watching it out of the blue 30 years later, it's like, well, this is a very slow-paced match with the big guy from Princess Bride and the...
No, obviously I knew who they were before we did this podcast, but
right.
I didn't really... It is, I guess now at this point in my wrestling journey, actually actively watching it and not just watching it passively through the years, I can say it's not really going to... Yeah, the match in itself is not really doing it for me.
Right, and that's very understandable, I think.
Yeah.
So it was at the Pontiac Silverdome?
Yeah, I didn't get any new fun facts since you already did it.
Yeah. But I think the Pope had been there a couple months earlier.
Later, yes.
Yeah,
so the Pope broke the record that was probably overstated to begin with.
Right, but then they would just ignore that and just say large indoor sports
record. Well, that record was broken, too.
Yeah.
In 2010, so.
True.
Either way. But let's go on to a high cultural and high technical match in context of our relationship. Wait a second. Is this the one with the kid?
Yes. So, March 24th, 1991, WrestleMania 7.
Mm-hmm.
The Macho King.
Oh, Macho King.
Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior in a career, they call it career threatening match, I believe.
When did he get promoted to King?
He won the kingship about fall of 89. He beat King Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Oh, that guy was King?
Yeah. Well, it bounced around a bit. King Haku for a while, as my shirt lovingly says. And then, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was King.
No, that was an official title they passed
around. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
When did they stop that?
With Randy Savage.
Ah.
Because his career ended. So
there's no King Slayer?
There's no King. Well, for a while, then they get back to the King of the Ring. But that's different.
Okay.
So Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage. Career-threatening match, and this was because at the Royal Rumble, Randy Savage issued a challenge to either Sergeant Slaughter or the Ultimate Warrior for a title match, whoever won. The Ultimate Warrior said he would not give him a title match, so Randy Savage comes out and cost him the match.
Ah.
Hits him with the scepter across the
head. That's right.
And then...
Ooh, that scepter is deadly.
It is. And then they decided that they would have a match and that it was bigger than the WWE title, they said, as the Warriors' awesome tights event and Duster eventually said. So, and luckily, right before the match, if we needed any more hype, Bobby the Brain Heenan, from the most impossible of angles, looks halfway down the aisle in the second row and is able to spot Miss Elizabeth, gets a cameraman to know exactly where he's pointing.
Right, of course.
It's just the damnedest bit of luck that they were able to spot her right before.
Good thing.
The big show.
Good thing, too.
The big match.
What was their status at the time?
They were still married.
On the show. The plot line.
In WrestleMania 5, they had broken up because Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage fought, and she was the manager of both of them. And afterwards, like, Randy Savage wanted nothing to do with her and got the sensational Sherry.
Oh, yeah. There was a little too much Sherry in her thing in this one for me. That was my one kind of note for this.
Yeah. I could understand
that. Not my one note, but that was my... I don't want to leave... Being a negative Nancy, leaving out my negative comments.
But. Well, yeah, but I think that was... It's... she's involved a lot, but it kind of ends like midway through the match, her getting so involved.
That's true. That's true.
I think it's kind of like at the beginning, yeah, she's all over the place, running around, and but then like towards the point where Randy Savage takes control and he hits the five elbow drops,
mm-hmm.
and then Warrior kicks out of that, and then the Warrior hits his finishing spring of the press slam and the big splash, and then Randy Savage kicks out of that, which no one had done.
Oh, okay.
Even, or no, Hulk Hogan had done it, but besides Hulk Hogan, no one had done it, which is basically saying no one had done it.
Right.
And then the Warrior starts questioning his gods.
Yeah, that's kind of where it lost me. I mean, yeah, I thought I had my notes, you know, two very flashy dressers. I
yes.
think you could, that's probably the most amount of flamboyance you're going to have in the
room. Yes, this is the very much time. Like wrestling.
Do they have different costume people, or is this like from the same
Probably same different people. Both that, back then, it was like you had to get your own. So
right.
they probably had different people.
But they went in the same direction, kind
yes,
of.
Yes, yeah.
That would be a good Project Runway challenge to design ring gear. Ooh, I don't watch that show.
It has to be like back then, though. Nowadays, they're all boring.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm sure it's someone can kick it into gear, but that's
yeah.
a need that can be filled. Yes, yeah, lots of body slams and clotheslines. I wrote the Warrior does a cool push-up move. I forget what that was exactly.
The press,
yes.
Yeah, the gorilla press slam.
I like that. It was good. It was good, effective. And then, yeah, when the Warrior started getting messages from the gods, I believe, I did not know what
and
was
best,
going on.
The best part about that is Gorilla Monsoon, the announcer, just knows exactly what he's talking about.
Obviously.
Saying, he's talking to his gods. He's getting a message that maybe it's not my time.
Sure.
Yeah. And Bobby the Brain Heater is like, what are you talking about?
That's how I felt. I agree with Bobby.
Yeah, so
on
I mean, these two are, this is probably their second best announcing show. The other one we will get to in due time, I'm sure. But also, in this, I like how they kept mentioning that this is, we're getting word from the back that this is the highest watched pay-per-view match of all time. Like, there's meters that can just tell you how many people
yeah,
are watching
know.
Pay-per-view
like,
at one time.
Like the gas meters.
Exactly.
Like gauges.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then, eventually the Warrior gets the message from his gods to go back in and keep fighting.
Right, of course.
So he does, and he eventually hits three flying shoulder blocks and pins Randy Savage with one foot on his chest.
That's right.
To get the win.
But that's not where it is.
No, at 20 minutes and 47 seconds. So the Warrior celebrates, puts on his awesome duster.
Yep.
And walks back to the back and speak with his gods some more.
That's sure, yep.
And then Sherry gets in, and she's pissed off because Randy Savage was her meal ticket, so how is she going to get paid anymore if he's retired? She starts putting the boots to him.
Oh, yeah.
And then Elizabeth jumps out of the crowd in her sequined black
with the white stars
shirt that is just amazing, runs to the ring and just throw Sherry out of the ring very quickly. Randy Savage gets up. He's all disoriented.
That's right, because he thinks it's Sherry's job.
Sherry, yeah, and almost...
This is like peak drama.
Yeah, and looks around at the crowd. The crowd's going crazy. Elizabeth's crying, and they hug.
Uh-huh.
And then he puts her app on his shoulder. Crowd's going crazy.
Yeah,
there's people
much,
crying.
Much rejoicing.
There's ladies crying in the crowd. They show the infamous raincoat kid.
It's not a raincoat.
No,
though.
Were
you the ones that thought that?
No, that was definitely a thing.
That he was wearing a raincoat.
Yeah.
Well, a yellow hat.
A yellow hat, and he's holding up his Ultimate Warrior wrestling buddy, even though Randy Savage is being celebrated.
I gotta make that like the screensaver on my phone or something. Like you can't see that picture and like not smile.
Yes. So then, and then he puts her down, and she goes to open the ropes for him because the whole time she was his manager, even when he was a good guy, his champ, she always held the ropes open for him. Randy Savage says no,
not this time,
and he holds the ropes open for her, saying, showing that he's become a good man now, even though he's lost, and he leaves as probably the second biggest baby face in the company, even though he's retired.
Yeah, well, it worked.
Yep.
It was effective. I mean, when we first started watching, I'd seen the end before
right.
with Elizabeth. So when the match started, I noticed, I recognized the sweater, the shirt she was wearing.
Yeah, that's a shirt you don't forget.
Right, but I liked this match.
Yeah.
The match of that was really good technically, good drama. I mean, this one had it all.
Yes.
Where's this one going to go on your list?
This one is, so I saw this, was the first pay-per-view I saw live at Uncle Dave's house.
Oh, nice.
And
who else? And your cousins?
Yeah, it was actually for Nick's communion.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's a great communion.
It really was. It's better than just getting a card and $40. Get a pay-per-view for $30 and a VHS
witness
tape.
This is live, absolutely.
You're good. Although it didn't work for the first half of the show. It was scramble vision. But eventually, somehow on Saturday nights or Sunday nights back then, cable men worked. And they were able to come to the house and fix it.
Well, you paid for that pay-per-view.
Just in time for this match, actually.
Oh, wow. It was kismet.
Close to the wire.
It was fate.
So back then, I loved this match. Like, 10 years later when I got the WrestleMania box set, I loved this match. And to this day, it's my favorite match of all time. So
really?
It's my number one. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Big reveal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's always been right up there and...
I can see why. I definitely understand.
I think it's, like you said, it's got... The action is very good.
Mm-hmm.
The story in the match is great. And then the afterword just kind of puts the cherry on top, I think, to make it... To push it over anything else.
Yeah, no, I agree. Very good.
Yep.
I did find a couple facts about the LA Sports Arena.
Okay.
The first one kind of tie into the Duncan Center... And then the Duncan Center opened. Nixon was in town, and they invited him to the opening. He's like, nah, I'm good. He did, however, attend the opening of this arena.
Oh.
You know, so I guess he gives a little bit more weight to the West Coast.
Yeah.
Not as fun, but the arena is the exterior and the foyer of the Euthanasia Center in the film Soylent Green.
Oh,
so they use that for the establishing
shots.
That's nice.
Okay.
So, yeah, not really...
So originally,
known for if you're going there.
So originally, the show was not supposed to be there.
Really?
It was originally going to be at the LA Coliseum.
Like with the USC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
wait, how? Okay.
So on outdoor WrestleMania, but there's conflicting stories. The main thing is tickets weren't selling.
That's a problem.
Also, the...
Because this is... What's the guy who says, Monday, and what it's all about?
The Dexter style slick.
Yeah.
But also, at the time, the main event was Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter. And Sergeant Slaughter was an Iraqi sympathizer at the time.
Mm.
And this was just after, actually,
The Gulf War
had ended. Because it was like a... Very quick war.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
But there were
still,
troops over there and stuff. So, supposedly there was... Well, there were threats against Sergeant Slaughter. There was one time that he got a call that Vince McMahon and his house had bomb threats against them. So, they had to, move his family and Vince's family, to a safe hotel.
Oh, jeez.
So, then they claimed that there were security concerns about this show. But, at the same time, they had only sold, 13,000 seats to a 100,000 seat.
Oh, that looked terrible.
Arena. So, also they decided to put in the LA Sports Arena, right before any more tickets would have sold, so that they wouldn't have another arena in town to move it to.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of there probably were some sort of security concerns.
I'm sure, but if they had sold 90,000 tickets...
They wouldn't have given a shit about safety concerns.
They're we'll pay the extra or whatever for security.
Exactly,
but yeah.
I think this was also when... 1990 is kind of when business just started going down a little bit. It kind of got worse as 92 came, but 90 was the start of the downfall.
The decline. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Yep. So, next, we go to WrestleMania 10 on March 20th, 1994, at Madison Square Garden. I'm sure you still have plenty of fun facts about Madison Square Garden.
I just kind of stopped looking. The ones you sent me were all very weird.
Yeah.
So, we're all familiar with the garden.
There were bike races there that went on for days at a time.
Yep.
Yeah. So, this was...
They had the different color seats. But that
yes.
I might talked about that one on the podcast, but that
yes.
one, I'm not going to talk about it now because it still doesn't make any sense. It was Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, the ladder match, no disqualifications.
For the...
I did not write that part down.
For the Intercontinental title?
Yep, sure.
Yep.
How do you remember all this?
Well, that's easy. That's like nothing.
Ah, duh. First thing I wrote is Razor Ramon is greasy and Shawn Michaels is peak mullet.
Yes. Okay. That's true.
Impression. Actually, I really liked this one, too.
Yeah, this one is...
They're both, once again, like, I think they're very, like, good, like, technically. And they're a good, like, showman, too.
Yeah, and this one...
And you see Shawn Michaels is booted.
Yes, which is a big...
Big draw for the ladies.
Yes, exactly, which is what really they want to draw women off of Shawn Michaels' butt. So, yeah, yes. This was the first, not the first ladder match ever in the WWF, but the first one ever shown on pay-per-view and given, like, the only other ones had been on, like home video releases that
gotcha.
Not a lot of people saw.
What's a home video? Like, they put, like, straight to VHS?
Yeah, like, they put... Huh. It's Coliseum video, so they would just have, like at the TV tapings they'd have some matches they would just tape to put on video.
Interesting.
And some, a lot of times it'd be like tryout matches stuff that wasn't going to be on TV, but they'd do something with it eventually.
Was Coliseum video like part of WWE?
Yeah, it was their video company.
Gotcha.
It started as a porn company.
But of course.
Then changed.
Pivoted to wrestling.
Yes. So this was the first time, though, that it was actually... on pay-per-view, made a big deal about. So the rules for this, well, also, so Shawn Michaels got suspended in September he claims he failed a drug test, but it was steroids and he didn't do steroids. He said there was plenty of drugs that he could have failed a test for, but steroids wasn't one of them. It might have been a pay thing, but whatever reason, he was gone for 2 months, so they needed a new Intercontinental champ. Razor Ramon eventually wins it, and then Shawn Michaels comes back and he still has his belt.
Oh.
So they start feuding over who the real Intercontinental champ is. So they have the ladder match where both belts are hung up.
So tell me more about Razor Ramon, because I feel like he's good, but he never really was like, in my mind, he's not going to be like the one of the wrestlers you can name automatically. So what's his deal? Him and the 1-2-3 kid, like, never really.
So he like, came in, sky, the... like, as a big. Deal like bad guy. Well, he was called the bad guy, but as a heel also. And then, but eventually, he's one of those guys that just like he seemed cool and turned good guy just really for no reason other than just like people were cheering him just out of principle. Like he eventually did like attack Ted DiBiase to turn face, but like he had been getting cheered before that just. By no action of his own, just people liked him.
He almost seems like a Roman Reigns type character.
Kind of.
Maybe it's the dark hair.
Yeah, I think they just kind of look similar. And so he was always, like, right around the IC level.
What do you mean?
Like, the Intercontinental title level.
I still don't know that.
Like, he was never, like, after he turned face, he wasn't, like, fighting for the world title.
Is that the biggest one?
Yeah. He was always like the level right below that.
Gotcha.
Like, he would be the guy that would wrestle in the semi-main event, but never the main event.
Yeah. Why did he get stuck at that level, you think?
I think it was just they had Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Diesel eventually comes along, and he's pushed more. So just like The Undertaker was still around. So there were just so many, there was a glut of... good like yeah, face
that's
guys
a, that's that, a good problem to have yeah there, right you think
well yeah but this was also like the worst business time of WWE's history so
gotcha yeah
so in the match itself they use the ladder quite a bit
they did
they
yeah.
use it as a weapon Shawn Michaels flies off it a lot
lots of I said lots of big moves off the ladder and this is they did not have a sturdy ladder because the ladder got pretty janky near the end.
And this was at the time when they didn't have, now when they have a ladder match, they have 8 ladders out there.
Like made to order.
Made to order, yeah. And this was just a standard ladder that they just found at some hardware store.
Yeah, someone went to like Ace Hardware before the show. Yes. Bought maybe a ladder, maybe one backup ladder. Probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
Just said, here we go.
I mean, a ladder in downtown New York's got to cost an arm and a leg.
Maybe they went out to New Jersey and got it or
maybe
something.
Maybe that's it. Well, they drove it in from Stanford on the big production truck.
Probably. Well, they probably had, that's true. They probably had ladders in all their gear. And they just grabbed one. Like, here you go.
Yeah.
Use this. Yeah, we got this already. Yeah.
So that goes 18 minutes and 47 seconds.
Yeah, that sounds right. But it was good. It was well paced.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah, it's not drags. It even holds up today. I would say, like,
I think so.
And it also sets the pace for all the ladder matches that came after it. Like the tag, it eventually leads to the tag title, the tag ladder match that we watched with the Hardys, right, and Edge, yeah, and Christian, and then that led to the TLC matches afterwards. And that led to, nowadays they have Money in the Bank matches with like six guys. Mm-hmm. And
no, I thought it was good. Good, yes, I had good pace, good moves. I thought they were even, you know, pretty evenly matched in terms of their style and everything. Yeah. So where's this going on your list?
This was a ten star match, and it is right at my number 10 listing.
Oh, okay.
And this is, again, like,
I could see that, yeah.
It's great as a ladder match. Well, it's great as a match, and it also has so much historical significance value, behind, yeah, it. Yeah, so I think that's why I don't think at first it was in my top 10. I had like 13 or something, but I think I moved it up just because of the historical
value. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, yeah, I thought this was good, and we've talked, yeah, about Madison Square Garden before.
Yes,
in terms of facts.
I think we've got Madison Square Garden down pretty well. So then we skipped ahead quite a bit to WrestleMania 21, April 3rd, 2005, at the Staples Center,
mm-hmm,
in LA. And we looked at
Kurt Angle. I could do this part. Okay. Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels. It was a straight up match.
Yep.
I did not write what title or belt it was for.
There was no titles or belts. Good. It was just kind of like to see who the best wrestler was.
Gotcha.
Like, who wasn't the best wrestler who's not fighting for a title, basically, would be the story. And it was based off the fact that Kurt Angle claimed when, in 1996, when he won the gold medal, that people would come up to him and say, "You're not the best wrestler in the world. Shawn Michaels is the best wrestler because he's the WWF champion."
Uh-oh.
So he claims that he always hated him because of that. And then they have, at the Royal Rumble, Kurt Angle comes out and Shawn Michaels eliminated him. And so right after that, Kurt Angle goes back in the ring and beats up Shawn Michaels. And that kind of starts their feud.
Okay. Sorry, I was looking for my fun fact about Staples Center. I couldn't find it on my phone. That's all right.
We've been there.
We've been there before?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's probably why I don't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was, I forget, you told me, but I forget. When did Kurt Angle win his gold medal?
1996.
So this was 9 years after.
Yeah.
It was kind of a little grabby at the beginning.
Yeah, they kind of...
It was a little grabby.
They kind of kept doing amateur,
yeah,
holds and...
Like high school wrestling moves.
Yeah, and they kind of kept having Shawn Michaels, like, come out on top, kind of like psyching out Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually they get it down to a more...
Like...
Pro wrestling,
yeah,
match, which,
yeah,
is
like,
what they should have done.
Right, for sure. I said lots of suplexes. I liked,
yes,
the hip lock move at the beginning. I'm sure you told me what that was.
A hip toss, I believe.
Oh, I heard hip lock.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. Oh, the part that I thought was a little strange, and we have not really seen this in any other matches we watched, how the ref was, like, bodily throwing himself in between,
yeah,
them.
Yeah, the ref was really... getting in between them in the corner.
Yeah, and
quite
who's
a few
the ref?
Times.
That was there. Someone specific, right?
Yeah, I think it was
someone's son. I might be confused.
Yeah, I think. Match. Yeah, it was probably Brian Hebner, Earl Hebner's son.
We can go with that.
Yeah,
someone can contact you and. If we're,
yeah,
wrong.
I'm pretty sure that's who it was. And then from there, so back and forth match, 27 minutes actually, which. I was kind of surprised it was.
Yeah, that's.
Looking at it now, it seems like. I didn't think it was that long, actually. I thought it moves pretty well, I think.
I said it was more of a slow burn. I had that in my notes. I mean, it kind of had all the elements of, like, in and out of the ring. And,
yeah,
like,
it moves around a lot. A
lot of ropes. I said I liked the springboard move off the ropes into the table. Oh, yeah, I did like that.
Oh, yeah. Shawn Michaels does a moonsault.
That was good.
Yeah, it's Brian Hebner who is the referee.
Yeah.
With his cool blonde frosted tips.
Oh, yeah.
Very 2005.
2005? I feel like that was a little bit past,
yeah,
frosted tips.
You know, that once you commit to the frosted tips, though, you can't just let them burn away. You gotta keep them strong.
No, guys can easily shave them off. It's more like like girls in high school who like frost the tips, and then it's like, unless you really want to. That's the thing why I never really want to dye my hair, is it's a lot of maintenance.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a different subject.
Different podcast.
Don't come to either of us for hair care tips.
No. My hair care tip is get it shaved off every 6 months.
There you go.
So this match, eventually, Shawn Michaels hits the super kick, but when he does, he's too tired to capitalize and cover. And then eventually Kurt Angle puts on the ankle lock and hit, got it for like 2 minutes, finally.
Yeah, that was kind of what. Oh, yeah. I had something in my notes about someone's foot getting caught in the ropes, but.
Well, that's in the ladder match also.
You're right.
Shawn Michaels' foot gets caught in the ropes then, and that's how Razor is able to get the belts.
That's true. Yeah, that's the other thing. This match, there weren't a lot of countouts till a lot later.
Yeah.
You know, some matches, it's like, you know, I guess it usually happens towards the end because you want to build up to it.
Right, yeah.
But not a lot of kickouts.
Especially by this time, you knew, like, Kurt Angle wasn't going to beat Shawn Michaels with a suplex, you know.
That's true.
He had to do a little bit more. So, this match, I haven't placed it yet, but okay. Let me see here. 05. I ranked it high, I know. 9 out of 10.
Oh.
So it'll probably
9
be.
9 out of 10. Okay.
Yeah, not 9 overall. Okay. 9 out of 10.
We're having this problem again.
Yes, I know. It's confusing.
It's not. You just keep doing it.
So, I mean, it'll be on the list and probably in the top 50, I would say.
Yeah. That sounds about right. Yeah, I above average, but not super stellar.
Right, yeah. And then from there, our last match, we went to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
April
back
1st.
Back to Detroit, but different.
Yes.
No Silverdome.
Yes. April 1st, 2007 at Ford Field in downtown Detroit, as I can attest.
Ford Field's the one downtown?
Yeah. Ford Field is, and then right across the street from it is the Tigers.
Gotcha.
Ballpark,
okay.
Yeah, America.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Batista versus The Undertaker. Was this for a belt of any
this
sort?
This was for the World Heavyweight Championship. 15 minutes, 51 seconds.
Yeah, that sounds right. Well, I knew enough before I saw this match that I knew who was going to win
That's
happened.
The problem with watching Undertaker WrestleMania matches.
But there's still good. Like the first one for our kind of test episode, I liked that Undertaker one,
yeah.
Even though I knew he was going to win.
Right.
That was still really good.
Yeah. And at this time, like, it was pretty sure Undertaker was going to win, but it wasn't like a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, you mentioned
because Batista
was hot.
Huge. He was the second. I mean, this was when they were kind of committed to Raw and SmackDown or different shows.
Okay.
And Batista was the guy on SmackDown just as much as John Cena was the guy on Raw. So he was pretty big. And you could have conceivably seen him beat The Undertaker.
Spoiler alert to anybody who doesn't know, but why did they decide Brock Lesnar would be the guy to beat The Undertaker? Why didn't they do it with Batista or
I think
else?
Batista, they just decided to keep it going. And then eventually when it got to Brock Lesnar, supposedly Vince McMahon just kind of decided that day, like, we're going to go with Brock. And from there, then Brock killed John Cena to win the title and was kind of like the unbeatable monster and still walks around with the belt and hangs out in Minnesota and North Dakota and not wrestling.
Yeah, well, he's pretty filthy rich. So
yep.
He wants to, and he could beat up literally anybody, so.
Yep.
He can do what he wants.
Do what he wants.
So like he seems pretty benign. Like I don't know. Is he like a good guy in real life? He doesn't seem too messy.
I think he's kind of a dick, but just kind of like a loner.
But he's not like problematic, is he?
No, not really.
Okay, that's fine then.
I'm sure you probably don't want to hear his political thoughts, because.
Well, yeah, but you know, like he's not like a wife beater. Doesn't have a rap sheet.
No.
Yeah. Stuff.
Married to Sable.
Oh, that's right. Well, that's good.
Yeah, good for him. So, anyway, back to The Undertaker and Batista.
Oh, yeah, Undertaker, yeah. Batista's very puffy.
Yes.
gets off to a quick start with the spear and a lot of punches in the corner. So I like it when they kind of start fast.
Yeah. And this, yeah, they don't really, like, Batista had a slew of bad matches in a row. Like, he'd come back from an injury about 8 months before and hadn't had a good match. Yeah.
Oh, that's a long time.
So people were like, this match is going to suck. Because Undertaker still...
It's like reverse hype. It's like...
Yeah.
We had very low expectations.
Everyone did, yeah. Because Undertaker was still, at the time, he needed a good opponent to have a good match. Like, you can't have a good match with anyone.
Hmm.
And then this match kind of, like, shocked everyone. I really like the Batista power slam.
Yeah.
Off one table into the... Through the other table to the Undertaker.
Yeah, I mean, that just... I mean, Undertaker's a big guy. And yeah. Batista can pick him up, like, no problem.
Yeah, he had no problem.
Flipping him around.
Flipping him around, yeah.
Yeah, I like... Undertaker did a Sound of Music move. So yes. I like seeing that back again.
Old school to everyone listening is what it's called.
Oh, no.
No, it's called the Sound of Music move.
Why is it called old school? That doesn't make sense.
Because, he always did it, but then when he was Biker Taker,
yeah,
he would call it old school, like, this is the move I did
back when I was not Biker Taker.
Yeah, and it just kind of stuck even when he went back to being the Dead Man. And
I think Sound of Music makes more sense.
Sure it does. So then they each hit all their finishers, and eventually Batista makes the mistake that you don't want to do during a WrestleMania match against The Undertaker, and that's go for a tombstone.
Oh, yeah. Because
then, of course, he'll reverse it and hit his own tombstone and win.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I also thought when Undertaker jumps over the top rope, like, it's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. And that was something that he really started.
And he really did it, like, from across the ring, too.
Yeah. He did it,
believe
like,
that.
Starting at WrestleMania 22. One, I think, he kind of, it was, or actually, he did it, like, in 1998 against Kane, so he kind of did it, that was his yearly WrestleMania spot, would be,
gotcha.
He'd always jump.
It's not WrestleMania until Undertaker yeah, right, jumps
exactly.
over the rope,
yeah.
I gotcha.
Even, like, when he'd have shitty matches, he'd still do that. Like, the year before, he fought Mark Henry in a casket match in Chicago.
Hmm.
It's pretty bad, but he does, Mark Henry's outside the ring on the other side of the casket. And Undertaker jumps out of the ring over the casket.
Oh, wow. Camera.
That's like the only fun part of the match.
Well, at least it's got something.
Yeah. So this was another one that I loved it. I thought it was great. I was there.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Yes.
That's right.
So this is my second WrestleMania. And I would say for the first two WrestleManias that I went to, it was my favorite match. Just because it was one that... You knew who was going to win, but you didn't know for sure. And they,
right.
There was enough doubt in your mind that you didn't know for sure what would happen. So, yeah, I thought it was real good. And
yeah, I like this one, too. Like I said, I don't really rank them at the end until we have the conversation. So when I was looking for a Ford Field fun fact, I got sidetracked on Batista's Wikipedia page. and I do have this, so let me get up my notes. I took a screenshot of it.
Batista, of course, Drax the Destroyer, and...
Yeah, I knew that.
And Stuber with Camille, his good friend.
Oh, yeah. So, what is... Do you know what Batista likes to collect?
Lunchboxes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Sorry. My fun facts. What a steal my thunder. Do you know what his favorite lunchbox is?
I'm going to go with the Fantastic Four.
His favorite is the 1967 Green Hornet lunchbox, as it has Bruce Lee on it.
Oh.
This collection started when he bought his wife an E.T. lunchbox, and she didn't want to break it, so he bought a second one. I don't understand that logic.
That makes sense at all.
I didn't read the citation. So in case she broke it, he'd have a backup, or like, that's the way I interpreted that.
Yes.
And then his next wife was a competitive pole dancer.
Oh.
They separated in early 2019.
Well, best of luck to you, Dave.
I think he'd probably be okay.
Does he buy her lunchboxes also?
I don't know. It was the ex-wife that
I think one of his wives died of cancer.
Oh.
I think the first one, maybe, who had the E.T.
lunchbox. Maybe he collects them in his memory. I think the collection is now kind of separated from the not associated with his spouse.
Yes.
Well, maybe that's why him and the pole dancer broke up.
She didn't like his lunchbox collection. Appreciate his lunchbox collection. Yeah, well, can't do that.
I mean, some things you have to go in with eyes wide open. Like, when I met you, and you were a big wrestling fan. And,
yes.
And if that was a deal breaker, I had plenty of chances to.
Yep, you're stuck now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it doesn't. Obviously, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
I don't think a lunchbox collection would bother. Well, it depends how much you were spending on lunchboxes.
Yeah, and also, like, do they need, like, a special wall in the house?
Or, like, a temperature-controlled room? I mean, your wrestling addiction's relatively cheap. I mean, the network is $10.99 a month now.
Yeah.
And then, aside from all the action figures in the garage.
Right.
You're pretty. You don't really spend too much money on it.
No. T-shirt here and there.
Oh, that, no, you have a lot of T-shirts.
Yeah, but it's not like I break the bank on them or any, like I go on eBay and buy
that's true.
$200 ones.
You haven't bought that crazy Steve Austin belt yet, so.
No, not yet. One of these days.
Yeah.
So, this one I also gave a 9 out of 10.
Could see that, yeah.
I'm trying to think just now. I think I'd have it slightly above the Kurt Angle Shawn Michaels match. Just
I could see that, yeah.
Because it's Kurt Angle Shawn Michaels, you expected it to be a great match.
It's all about expectations.
Yeah, and this I think this is why this match is kind of, it definitely exceeded its expectations.
Good.
So out of these five matches.
Yeah, I was just starting to look at that. I can say number five is definitely the Silverdome. Yeah, not surprised.
Yeah, it sounded like that.
It's pretty much
you were going to come out with that one.
That should not be a surprise to you. I guess we go from, I'm looking at the other ones. I mean, the other four were all really good.
Yeah. You know? This was.
I think that's why it was so easy to make that one, the bottom one.
The last four matches were definitely
really good. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, not because it's bad, but I think the fourth one has to be Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels, just because of the competition.
The lowest, yeah.
Right. And then I think one above that, I'd put Batista, Undertaker.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I mean, the next two are.
Yeah.
And I would say they're going to be at the worst in the top 15 of the overall pool.
Yeah, and I think number two, that Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels match, I really liked that one.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot for someone who just, you know, kind of getting the concepts of, not the concept, but I'm starting to.
A wider breath.
Yeah, I'm starting to, not nearly to the extent as obviously someone like you, but at this point in my wrestling journey, I'm starting to discern, be a little bit more discerning.
Right.
Instead of it all looking the same. And yeah, the number one would be the Ultimate Warrior Macho Man.
Yeah, I agree.
And we mentioned before, that was our Halloween costume the first year we were dating.
Yes.
Yeah.
That where was, I got, I didn't know how exactly to do Randy Savage pants. So I searched spandex tie-dye pants and was able to find women lacrosse pants that were a very nice style.
They were very snug.
But yeah, it was pink leopard print and then like purple and blue, like, tie-dye design.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Good design.
It was very, very Macho Man-esque.
You've always been good with your Halloween costumes. That's one of your fortes for
sure. Yes, yeah. Before we go on, we're going to take a quick pause to just remind you of all the great shows on the PTBN Wrestling feed. Plenty of great content for you on both of our podcast feeds here at Place to Be Nation.
We have plenty of great content for you right here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, including
the Place to Be podcast, the mothership of the PTBN, where co-hosts JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo take you chronologically through the history of WWE.
PTBN Main Event with hosts Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Weil, breaking down all the current events in the world of wrestling.
The Wrestling War Zone podcast, looking at the Monday Night Wars, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell.
Row 1, Seat 1. An interesting look inside the world of small-time wrestling and beyond, small-town wrestling, excuse me, and beyond, with host Ben Zanny welcoming in a variety of guests each week.
Then we have Talkin' WCW heads to center stage, where Tim Cable, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith look at the legendary promotion from WCW, looking at certain wrestlers and three of their matches each edition.
I think it combined. Extreme Three-Way Dance takes you back on a trek through the land of extreme with JT Rosero, John D'Amato, and Jennifer Smith.
Body Press Your Luck, a brand new wrestling game trivia show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan.
With This Ring, in which husband and wife Ryan and Cindy Everett discuss specific matches in their respective fandoms.
We probably don't have to read that part.
That's nice. That's us.
You Don't Know Billy Jack, where Drew Wardlaw and his friend Jordan watch and discuss some of the greatest pro wrestling matches of all time through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan. Search for a universal connection and pro wrestling storytelling. Kind of
familiar, yeah. Plus, monthly WWE pay-per-view reaction shows and semi-regular shows like Jenny and the Gems, No Holds Barred, Adam's Division, Special Relations, and Jeff Learns Wrestling.
Also, be sure to check out the PTBN Top Feed, littered with great content, offering tremendous shows like The Hard Traveling Fanboys, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, DC4U, Marvel Age, the Brother and Sister Rewatch podcast, and much more. Subscribe today.
And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, MCU Journey, the Infinity, and more.
And on our social media pages, make sure you look at the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament. It is now underway. We are in round one. There will be four matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. You don't want to miss a single one. Or actually just sign up on both so you could vote two times for your favorite show.
Is that what you've been doing?
Yes. Yeah.
What show have you been voting for?
Well, I mean...
Oh, each round.
Each round is a different show. Yeah.
Yes, I've been noticing that as well. And we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. Oh. You have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board.
And coming later this year, that is how With This Ring will continue. We will eventually turn it into WCW matches and hope you enjoy that. And thank you very much. And let's go on with the show. And welcome back to our second half of our WrestleMania Rewind series.
That's a good name for it.
Yeah.
I like that.
So we just went over five of the pretty big matches in WrestleMania history. All of them are pretty well known to the most casual of fans.
Right, yes.
Obviously, you're lower than that.
Yeah, so you're looking at me.
But now you even know. You could talk about the ladder matches.
That's true. I'm a little bit more conversant than I was even when we started this podcast. So by no means the same level of fluency. I will never have the same level of fluency as you, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah, that'd be kind of weird if you were. All right. So to go along with that, we are going to start our first match looking at the next.
Because, I mean, this one is Hulk Andre, and we had a pretty good discussion, I thought, about the WrestleMania match, because I was not impressed with the content of the match itself, and then that's when you let me know that some people were saying that was number one, more for its, I'll just call it its cultural value.
Right, yeah.
So very high cultural value, very low technical value. So I, even before we watched this match, I was like, okay, I'm probably going to like this better.
Right. Well, actually, originally I put the WrestleMania 3 match at 50.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And then eventually there were matches where, like, I couldn't rank it higher than that. So then after I did that, like, four or five times, I was like, okay, this isn't going to work. So I slotted it at 75.
Okay. Oh.
And then it ended up getting bumped even one further. So it ended up at 76.
Really?
Which I still think is fair. I have seen a lot of people, as the lists are being released, had it, like, in their 90s just to...
Pay homage to it,
but knowing that
acknowledge it, but recognize it's not that great of an actual wrestling
right,
match.
The actual content of the match itself is not very high. So the next thing we'll go to Hulk Andre 2, as it were, and this was on May the... February...
Yeah, you're multitasking over there.
Yeah.
Just, you know your way around these all these wrestling sites pretty easily.
Yeah. It was February the 5th, 1988, and Saturday night's main event was always on. It took the place of Saturday Night Live.
Really?
When they had replays.
Oh, wow.
So that would be on instead. But this was actually on primetime on Friday night on NBC.
Wait, the show was called Saturday Night's Main Event and it was aired on a Friday?
Well, when it was on Friday, it was the main event.
Gotcha.
And this was primetime network wrestling.
Wow.
And in 1988 when most people had, you know, just broadcast channels.
Yeah, 358.
Yep.
Two.
CBS.
CBS 2.
Of course.
NBC 3.
Oh, NBC was our 5. ABC was 7.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
And of course, here we had good old WGN always.
Oh, yeah, Fox was 8. That's all I really remember.
So it starts with the backstory of this feud. Well, actually, we actually went a little further back to the Royal Rumble to see the buildup of this whole match, which starts with the review of WrestleMania 3
mm-hmm.
with the controversial cover at the beginning.
Right.
And then Hogan winning. And then as the year goes on, Ted DiBiase shows up.
He kind of inserts himself. Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get to it, but I feel like Andre is more of like a character than an actual wrestler. So there was a lot of shenanigans involved in this one, too.
Right. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And so Ted DiBiase decides he wants to be world champ, but he doesn't want to fight for it. He just wants to buy it. Hulk Hogan refuses him.
Of course. Is that the barbershop one?
No, that was...
Oh, that was Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
Starting to run together.
Yeah, that was the Piper's Pit. But this was actually after the Piper's Pit. It's just a regular interview.
Okay.
And then Ted DiBiase decides if he can't buy it from Hulk Hogan, he'll get Andre the Giant.
To win it for him.
Buys the contract of Andre the Giant from Bobby Heenan for $1 million. And shrewd move later, the Brain buys the contract back for $100,000.
Ah.
That's why he's the Brain. He made a $900,000 profit.
Gotcha.
But, so, this match happens. It is not a long match.
Nope.
As a matter of fact, it is 9 minutes and 5 seconds.
More than the other one, isn't it?
No, the other one was like 12 okay. something.
Yeah, it was definitely short. There was a lot of, you know, shenanigans at the beginning, and there was a lot of chokeholds.
Yeah.
This one Hogan covers, but the ref doesn't see. And there was, I wrote down lots of ancillary, a short match, but lots of ancillary things going on. Oh, this was the one at the very beginning of the match. I asked you what's the ref's name, and you gave me this very, like, nondescript, like, evasive answer, so I knew something was going to be up with that.
Yes, so this is, so it's, the match goes along, and Dave Hebner is the assigned official. They make sure to actually point that out as announcers, and the match is going, and twice Hogan has the pin, but the ref's distracted. Then Andre hits a suplex, Hogan kicks out at 1, but the ref just counts to 3. And right away, Andre the Giant gives the World Wrestling Federation tag team belt to Ted DiBiase.
Yep.
And then as Hulk Hogan's arguing with the referee, another referee comes out looking exactly the same.
Right.
As it was his was twin
everyone,
brother.
Yeah, I was confused.
Yes.
Because everyone else seemed to kind of know what was going on, but I didn't.
Kind
know.
Of, but I think Hulk Hogan immediately jumped to the conclusion that it had to be plastic surgery.
Right.
Because that's much more likely than someone having a twin, that Ted DiBiase paid for facial plastic surgery. We wouldn't see again until Face Off in 1997.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a Mary Higgins Clark missed book about that, too. but like a plastic surgeon that gave all the women he operated on like the same face. But that's neither here nor there.
Yes, it was not exactly what happened. But so it's revealed that it was an evil twin referee eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Earl Hebner. And he eventually becomes the Hebner that is the referee for the next 20 years or so.
But was Dave Hebner, and were they both involved, the company, or is it just this
one? At the time, Dave Hebner was a WWF referee.
Okay.
Earl Hebner actually worked for WCW.
Ooh.
And Vince McMahon or whoever called him and said, like, hey, we got this idea for a storyline. Do you want to join with us? And he was like, yeah, sure. So he came over, became a referee, and Dave Hebner ended up moving up to being like an official in the back.
Gotcha.
So it worked out that they both had jobs, but with the WWF, which was probably better for all
people. In the long run.
Yeah. Until they started selling bootlegged merchandise and got fired in 2005. Yeah, they had a guy that was selling bootleg t-shirts outside of events.
Nice. Really, I mean, they should have asked Vince for a raise.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they did.
Maybe. Who knows? They probably, who knows how long they were doing it and maybe figured they could just keep going.
They got grandfathered in.
Yeah. So, the overall match, what did you think of it, though?
That's true. And comparing to the other one, I see they're both, no offense to Andre the Giant, but just, he's not, doesn't make for the best matches.
Yeah, he was struggling to get around still.
Yeah,
this
one. So I would say maybe this one's slightly better technical value, but still not a lot.
Yeah.
And then this one, well, I guess obviously the other one has much higher relevance.
Right.
Overall. I mean, this one, I don't think it was going to be. So I guess, I know I'm kind of rambling here, but the first one, I think, is the preference just because it's going to be more memorable.
Right, yeah.
I'm probably going to forget about this match in like 2 days.
Yeah,
like
I think.
The second one.
I think this was a better athletic match.
Yes.
I think Andre the Giant is moving better here than WrestleMania 3, which isn't a very high bar, but I think he was moving better. And at the time, I mean, I wasn't watching this live, but there was just kind of a thought like, well, Hulk Hogan's not going to lose.
Right.
So the shock of him losing at the time was probably big, but I don't think it still has the impact of the ending of WrestleMania.
This one had a very good video package.
Yes, yes. This one,
promos were pretty sweet.
It had it all set up for you, including the Hulk Hogan training montage. Like a minute and a half
like
to set the Jake the Snake Roberts music for some reason.
Right, like extreme close-ups on his biceps and his weird thighs.
So this match, it was one of those ones that were just cut. Just didn't make it quite all the way in for my list.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Probably about 105, 110.
I could see that, yeah. I don't think I'm going to really...
Yeah, again, this would have been like a historic value pick, and I already had the one.
Right. I mean, if there was a list of all the video packages, then maybe
right.
it would be different.
Oh, yeah, Hulk Hogan training would have definitely gotten on there.
Yeah, but the match itself, I agree. This doesn't really need to be dwelled on very much.
All right, so moving on, we went to SummerSlam in Wembley Stadium in London, England. The first pay-per-view ever held in Europe.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the second one held out of the United States.
A WrestleMania Saudi Arabia?
In Canada.
Oh. Wait. Oh, I see. Sure.
Like, as of then.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Not now.
That's, yeah. You're right. But yeah, we watched one of the ones in Canada. In Toronto.
Right. Yeah. The Sky Dome.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we were looking at following off their WrestleMania 7 retirement match, and the match where
quote-unquote retirement.
Randy Savage is retired. Here he's defending the world title a year and a half later.
Makes sense.
Yes.
That HR person must be very busy.
Yes, very.
Reinstating very and.
Well, he had to get reinstated because a snake bit his arm, so obviously he has to wrestle again.
That doesn't make any sense.
So, Randy Savage defending against the Ultimate Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And they claimed the whole time that Mr. Perfect would be in one of their corners.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair kept trying to stir the pot and get them against each other.
Kind of like this one, kind of like the last one. I know it's storylines, but they just all felt a little contrived.
Yeah, well, it's 1992 WWF. It's not going to be Breaking Bad or anything in level of nuance.
I guess not, but it was especially kind of... But I just felt a little clunky.
Yeah, I could see that.
And especially since Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage are such great wrestlers, they don't necessarily need the extra kind of... I think with Andre and Hulk, it makes sense to me that you want to add a little bit more drama. But
yeah.
I think the two of them have enough
Well,
drama.
Warrior,
I think they could carry it.
Warrior needs like the drama for matches and stuff. Okay. Like he can't really do... Especially at this time. He was actually coming off a storyline with the Voodoo witch doctor that made him throw up that he wrote.
It's an improvement over that.
Yeah, so they needed something, and I think it was just kind of like they wanted to figure out something to do here And they needed a reason for them to be fighting rather than just, especially whenever you have two good guys fighting.
That's right.
It's hard to make a story because neither of them's going to do anything evil leading up to it. Whereas, so you need someone to do something bad. So that's why you bring in Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect. And then I think you noted the Ultimate Warrior's ad bodysuit.
Oh, yeah.
With the muscles in it.
That was very bizarre. And flesh-colored bodysuit.
This is what started the very first of many Ultimate Warrior's dead rumors.
What do you mean?
At the time, people thought that, obviously, this is a different Ultimate Warrior. Because the real Ultimate Warrior died.
Okay.
And now that's the Texas Tornado, Kerry Von Erich.
They do look similar.
They do look similar, well, but yeah. This is him now, just with face paint on. And he's wearing a bodysuit, so you can't tell that it's a different body.
Yeah, I mean, people think now with the internet, we have all these crazy theories. They've always been
there. Oh, they've always been there.
How did you get, read that at, like, GeoCities or something? Or, like, how did that story get around?
The first time I think I heard of it was, like, a wrestling magazine, like a non-WWE one that
some of that, like, printed out of, like, someone, did you buy it out of the trunk of someone's car?
No, no, I bought it at, like, the Jewel.
Oh, okay.
It was a semi-legitimate rag.
I don't know. Some of those conspiracy theories.
Well, yeah, you know, it was three different Undertakers also.
So someone just had, like, their thing was dead wrestlers.
Dead wrestlers, yeah. Wrestlers die, and that they're just easily replaced with lookalikes.
Hmm.
There's a lot of lookalikes.
Angle.
Because, you know, there's never close-up of faces in wrestling.
No, never. But yeah. Interesting. Okay. That's a fun fact I did not know.
Yep. So, it's a back-and-forth match. This one was...
Yes, I said...
This was a little longer than... Yeah, this was 28 minutes. So, this is actually longer than their WrestleMania match. Minutes.
Oh, okay. That said, very multicolored.
Yes, yes. Very multicolored and...
And this is later in Macho's career, right? Because he had a shirt on for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Warrior was kind of in charge early. Then Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair come out and start meddling. Yeah, this is another... Yeah, the ref was taken out. Flair and Perfect... This has got a little confusing. Because first they went after Warrior, and then they went after Macho. Then you... How did it end?
So... I think Warrior's going for his splash off the ropes, and Flair hits him with a chair. And then Savage gets up.
Oh, I wrote down Macho jumped off the ropes.
Well, yeah. So, well, Savage gets up after this.
Okay, yeah.
Sees the Warrior down and goes up top to drop the elbow, but then realizes, I couldn't have done this. I didn't knock him down. Why is he down? And he sees Ric Flair with a chair, so he jumps at Ric Flair.
That's right.
But Ric Flair's just standing there watching him, so he just hits him in the leg with a chair. And he gets counted out, and then Perfect and Flair attack Savage's leg, and Warrior comes out and eventually helps him.
Yeah, I just know that Savage and Warrior leave as besties.
Yeah, but then, see, the thing was, afterwards they cut an interview with Flair and Perfect, and Flair's like, I told you all along Mr. Perfect would be in the dressing room of the winner. And 2 days later, when they came back, their first show in the U.S., Ric Flair actually wins the title from an injured Randy Savage.
Ah.
So the plan all along was to injure
Savage. I gotcha. Oh, okay. So, I gotcha.
So, that was the plan.
A little bit of... See, that's a little bit more nuanced than kind normal.
You kind of have to watch more than just...
It's part of what... It's a piece of a puzzle.
Right, yeah. Being maybe they should have just added that on to the SummerSlam show.
They should have. Yeah. Yeah, okay, did this one make your list?
This was another, this is like 102, 103. Yeah. This was just outside. It was on for a lot of it, but as more matches, I was like, oh, I got to add that, I got to add that. It just kind of got shunted down, unfortunately, and did not make it.
Well, I mean, this one does not hold a candle to the WrestleMania match.
Yeah, I mean, I could, this is a good story, and I appreciate it, but the whole story doesn't come together in this one match as well as it does in wrestling.
Well, that was your number one, right?
Right, that is number one.
Aww.
So that, this is a very good match, but
not top
of all time.
Yeah. No,
top 100 caliber maybe as far as the actual action goes, but there's enough to bump it out.
I'm going to call it the action. That's what our toddler says. Watch action.
Watch action.
Watch action. He's been watching a lot of action as he grows up.
Yep. As he should.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you didn't watch your parents. Your dad isn't into wrestling, so you found this on your own.
Yeah, but he never, like, there was never, like, limits on me watching it or anything.
Right, but he was never, like, actively. It's not like the network, you know.
Right.
You know, let's just
comment on. I watched 4 VHS tapes on loop.
If you had access to the network when you were growing up, like, would you ever even leave your house?
Probably not. No. I don't see why I would. Stupid.
Right, what would the point be?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but that's, yeah, we'll see. I mean, maybe he'll love wrestling. Maybe he'll love something we've never even freaking heard of right now.
He'll make millions unwrapping things on YouTube.
Oh, gosh. Well, then he can support us. Okay.
So, next we went to SummerSlam 1995 from the Igloo in Pittsburgh.
That's right. Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels in SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title.
In a
what? With ladder match.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The second ladder match. The rematch.
And so, like, he almost got, like, I was going to say Shawn Michaels kind of got typecast for ladders, but not really.
No, not too
much.
But
the two of them, their matches, back ladders, is that common? Because the Dudley boys were also...
Right, two, yeah. Not it, Dudley, it happened Hardy. More... Well, the Dudleys, Hardys, and Edge and Christian.
Right.
Three different
ladder matches
and tables match. It's just kind of these two kind of like Shawn Michaels had ladder matches off and on after this, and it was always just kind
of
like
we had a lot of matches. Period. So it's
right,
just
yeah, just
numbers.
Just, I don't think guys get typecast. They just end up with like specialty matches, kind of.
Gotcha.
Like the Undertaker with casket matches.
I don't think I've seen a cat. I'm sure I've seen a cat.
Yeah, they're not that good.
I was going to say, are there any on the list?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not that good.
Okay.
So this was going into the SummerSlam. They didn't have any. It was originally Shawn Michaels versus Psycho Sid.
Okay.
And like 2 weeks before, or I think like a week before, Gorilla Monsoon became the president of the WWF.
Sure.
And he decided, no one wants to see Psycho Sid versus Shawn Michaels. Like, they actually said this on the TV shows. Everyone wants to see Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon in a ladder match again. And since I'm the president of the fans, that's what we're going to do. So okay. There's no real build-up here. This is, again, two good guys just going at it for the president's, the president's entertainment, basically.
Okay.
And I would say that
I still don't understand. Why did Greg Willemont's... Why did Gorilla Monsoon become the president of the fans? Is that self-proclaimed?
Well, he said he was he was proclaimed president.
Okay.
There's no, like, election or anything. You're just given...
You're not a president.
Well, there's a board of directors, and they announce a president.
Okay.
And he said he was going to be a president for the fans.
Gotcha.
Like, he's going to listen to the fans.
He's president of the fans. Like,
he wasn't the president of the fan club. No. He was the president who was going to represent the fans. He's going to listen to the fans.
Were you in a fan club when you were little? I mean, this is like a fan club now, but
You were? Back then, like, the main draw for the fan club was you'd get a little video cassette or a tape cassette of the entrance themes.
Oh.
That was back when it wasn't, you know, you just put it on Spotify.
It wasn't like Alexa or something.
No.
Playing all the wrestling themes. Yeah.
Alexa, play Sexy Boy, Shawn Michaels.
Sexy Boy isn't included with Prime, but it's available with Amazon Music Unlimited.
Oh, we do.
Way over 50 million.
Alexa, stop. We don't have Amazon Music, unfortunately. Only Amazon Prime. I guess that's not good
enough. We have Amazon. Oh, yeah, I was going to say. Like, shouldn't Prime cover it?
I guess not. It just said it's not covered by Amazon Prime. I thought that superseded Amazon Music.
We actually do have a cassette player on the other side of the room.
Yeah, I don't think I have the cassette from 1992.
Oh.
I also have like 4 CDs with that song on it, though. So,
I don't know. We should try and find a copy of the cassette.
I'm sure I could look on eBay and pay like $50 for something.
Well, don't pay $50. Yeah, exactly. For it, but we should utilize the cassette player more often, is what I'm saying.
So going to the actual match.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back and forth, and this time they said the rule was you couldn't use the ladder as a weapon. They do, but they do it like, oh, I accidentally tipped the ladder over.
Right, yeah. We got off to a really quick start. A lot of moves off the ropes this time. I said they both had great mullets.
Yes, you know, yes,
I do have I have the hard-hitting commentary that
they both were very faithful to their 1995 mullets.
Absolutely, yeah. Shawn Michaels showed his butt again, but it wasn't facing the camera.
Yeah, so yeah, it was.
That was a missed opportunity
for everyone. Upsetting. Very upsetting.
Well, not for the people on that side of the arena.
Yeah, they got to. I guess they
enjoyed it, but the rest at home didn't really get a get a view. Oh, what else did I write down? I said, yeah, Razor Ramon's pretty much in charge the first half of the match, but then Shawn does a flip off the ladder. Oh, and then Razor pulls out another ladder.
Yes, the second ladder.
The second ladder. Another babka.
Another babka.
Was that the first time that happened?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So there was a second ladder. They always just said it was the standby ladder. But
at this point, they were using more like ladders for the matches, or were they still just kind of dragging out whatever they had backstage?
I think this was probably decided to be
like these gonna be a ladder match. Like, yeah.
Since they had two of them.
That's true. Yeah. Because the first match, the ladders got really janky.
Yeah, this one, the one did get kind of jammed up.
That's right, yeah.
And then,
well, it wasn't like Acme ladders. They had to
right, yeah. The only problem with this one was the ending.
Yep, I was going to say.
I think Shawn Michaels was supposed to hit a super kick to Razor Ramon. He like tries a few times.
Right.
Then he falls. Then he gets up, falls again. Then he gets up and gets the belt.
You can tell he's like pissed off at himself.
So that's the only thing that really knocks it down for me, but I think it's still just as good as the other one. Yeah, I actually think it might have been a little better, but like again, significance gives the nod.
The WrestleMania. Yeah, the ending kind of fell apart a little bit, and they don't see Shawn Michaels' butt.
Of course,
so
yeah.
Those two factors kind of pushes it to the WrestleMania one for me, for sure. But yeah, you're right, still good. It wasn't like a complete blowout.
Yeah, so the first one I had at number 10.
Yep, okay, that makes sense.
So just right there, and then this one I had at 34.
Oh, wow, so they still had this pretty high.
Yeah, this is still
it is good, yeah. It is very good.
Just a little lower.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. We're going ahead a decade.
Yep.
To 2005. Vengeance at Las Vegas. This is a straight match between Kurt Angle and another one, Shawn Michaels. Was it for a title?
No, this was just a rematch. They kind of said, like, we had a great match at WrestleMania. Let's do it again. And this was actually... So this was when they had split pay-per-views between Raw and SmackDown.
Okay.
And I think this was another one with like a week build, like a 1 week.
Oh, like a WEA key?
No.
Well, well, yeah.
Like where Kurt Angle was drafted to Raw, came out and said he wants to fight Shawn Michaels, the pay-per-view, and has the match with him. This one goes 26 minutes.
Yeah, this one... I had a lot of lame kickouts written down because that's what. Though this is the one where it was like, Kurt Angle would be pinning Shawn Michaels, and he would just like lift his shoulder, lift his shoulder. It happened like 7 times. It didn't really.
Wasn't your cup of tea?
Wasn't my cup of tea. Looks like it's on your list.
Yeah, it made it at 46.
Oh, okay.
And the WrestleMania match is 21.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think both matches were really good. I just, again, I think with a lot of these matches, it's just tough to beat the original.
Yeah, and Kurt Angle's so grabby. I know that's his style, but just comes off as very grabby.
Well, he's an amateur. He's a gold medal, Olympic gold medalist.
I know, I'm aware.
He won an Olympic gold medal with a broken friggin' neck.
And what year was it? I've guessed this so many times.
1996.
So in Atlanta.
Yes, the Atlanta Games.
Did you watch his Atlanta matches? Have you seen them?
I've probably watched it then, but I didn't like...
You haven't gone back and rewatched them?
No, because amateur wrestling isn't really that fun. Like, I've seen, like, 10-second clips of it.
Okay.
That they've shown on WWF, but never...
Gotcha.
Yeah. He did beat a smelly Iranian, though, so it's kind of...
Oh, kind of very fitting.
Yeah, and, I mean, it would have fit in very well in the WWF in 1984. And
so that'd get kind of part of that lore.
Yes.
Another angle. Okay.
And this was Vengeance in June of 2005 at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I said they got the out of the ring. Oh, we get Kurt Angle slams him into the announcer's table.
Oh, yeah,
so that's always fun.
A German suplex onto the table, which
that's right. Pretty, yeah, that was cool.
Pretty gnarly.
Then yeah, he got powerbombed into the ropes, and then Shawn Michaels comes back with a bunch of clotheslines.
Yeah,
I don't know why I'm recapping that. I'm the least qualified person.
No, you're good
to talk about this.
Yeah, and I think this one, the one problem with the WrestleMania match is how long Kurt Angle has the ankle lock on.
Yeah.
At the end, it's like 2 minutes here. And here, it's never longer than like 45 seconds before Kurt or Shawn Michaels gets out of it, which is good. And Harriet Sweet Chin Music twice.
Yep.
The first one, neither one can do anything. And then the second one, he hits, and that's it. If he hits it twice, it's over.
Yeah. But no, I think I like the WrestleMania one better as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then our last match, we went to 2007.
Yep.
Coming off of WrestleMania 23, Batista versus The Undertaker, and a WrestleMania match that kind of shocked everyone at the time. No one was thinking it would be that great, and it was that great. It was probably the match of the show, even overshadowing a Shawn Michaels John Cena match.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't watched many John Cena matches.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's definitely been a lot of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
My phone now recognizes that I put in Shawn, it'll put Michaels in next for me.
Yes, yeah. Well, I was doing a little sabermetrics earlier today, and 17 matches have Shawn Michaels out of my top 100, so it's going to, you're going to get a lot of Shawn Michaels matches one way or the other. He was the most represented.
Okay, did you do like a histogram or a little bar chart?
No, I just like listed the highest number of guys.
Okay, could do a nice little bar graph.
Steve Austin had 11. Okay. I didn't make a graph for him.
That's interesting that Steve might, how many did The Rock have?
Not many. He was only like 5 or 6.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think because he has like these epic matches, but like, obviously Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin do, but they also have like kind of under the radar matches also, where The Rock, it was kind of like either this huge
like
drawn out spectacle or like an okay match.
Gotcha. Gotcha, gotcha. Okay. All right. So we're on to the, this is a Hell in a Cell match.
Yep. Survivor Series, Hell in a Cell. Got all the cool names going with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for the World Heavyweight title, which was held by Batista coming in. And again, the good thing I think with Batista Undertaker matches, they don't try and make them 35 minute matches. This is 21 minutes, and I thought that's like a perfect length. It didn't feel like too long.
I think I start to go downhill after minute 15.
Yeah, this was the longest of their matches, I think. But I think it still kept up a nice pace, and it's not too dragged out.
Right.
And what happens in it?
This thing really comes apart at the end. It really does. For whatever reason, some Edge was hiding underneath the ring with a camera.
Well, he wanted to pose as a cameraman.
No one's going to believe that.
Why? There's not a lot of 6'4", 280-pound cameramen?
Yeah, I just had a lot of question marks. Said Edge was hiding underneath the ring, ? Holding a camera? And then Edge drags Batista over the Undertaker. Right,
because
Batista, quote-unquote, wins. But I don't know. Was there any context around this? Was there a feud going on?
Well, Edge had been gone for a while. Edge had been gone for a while.
Did they like have follow-up?
It kind of was that Edge, the next month Edge wins the title from Batista, and it was kind of like always implied that he knew he wouldn't be able to beat The Undertaker.
Gotcha.
So he knew that he could beat Batista because he could outsmart Batista.
Gotcha. He really didn't need to be holding a camera.
Well, I think that was just his cover to get into the cage, because you can't get into Hell in a Cell.
Well, he was hiding underneath the ring.
Well, yeah, but when he comes out, he's not noticed right away. He just kind of blends in with the cameraman.
He's noticed right away.
Well, he's a cameraman.
I just thought that part was unnecessary. They should just have him come out. Like, don't have like a flimsy explanation.
Well, I think also they wanted to use the camera as a weapon because that's kind of what the feud is built around eventually.
A camera?
Using a camera as a weapon.
That's kind of stupid.
Well.
But, you know, sometimes you just have to hear yourself say it out loud, Ryan.
I don't mind it.
Undertaker did Sound of Music move again.
Yep.
It was actually funny. Like, we were watching the match, and then I was one second away from turning to you and be like, they're really not using the cell very much.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, Batista goes face first into the chicken wire and starts bleeding. So I was like, oh, well, guess I just need to wait a little bit longer.
Yep, they do.
They both get bloody. Batista gets really bloody, and that's not, as you know, my favorite.
Right.
I know there's a table.
Yes, they
there's all sorts end of up stuff
bringing out all
ring.
This stuff. Oh, yeah.
So how long was Edge underneath there?
He probably came out during the Undertaker's entrance when it's all dark. They came out because, like, they'll have guys help bring the cell down. So he might have, like, come out as, like, a crew member, helped, and then, like, because everyone's watching, like, the video package.
That's true.
While it's coming down. So then they just slid it's under the ring.
Incognito.
Yeah.
Oh. And then how does he know when he's supposed to come out?
He's probably watching the manager.
Oh, they have a monitor under there?
Probably. Or at least under like a ring? Headpiece.
Okay, that makes
like
sense.
Like a little airpiece. Thing, and they give him a cue.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Because, I mean, he comes out. It's not like he's like, he has to hit someone in the middle of a move, though.
Right, that's
like he
true.
He comes out and takes his time and hits it.
You know, does some filming.
Yeah.
Get some footage.
Yeah, you want to watch it later. And also, at this time, the next week on SmackDown, they revealed that he was going out with Vicky Guerrero, who is Eddie Guerrero's widow, who was the SmackDown general manager at the time.
Okay.
So that's, like, why he's not punished or anything.
Oh, okay.
Because he's banging the boss.
Kind of get away with anything.
Yes.
Were they really married, Vicky and Eddie Guerrero?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, like, after Eddie Guerrero died, she just kind of got a job.
That's nice. That's good.
Yeah.
How did he die again?
Like a massive heart attack.
From
years of steroids and painkillers.
Gotcha.
So, their original match at WrestleMania ended up 38.
Oh, okay.
This one was just off. This was another one that was on the list for a while.
I could see that.
And then it just ended up getting squeezed off at the end. So, really, of the matches that we watched, the second half, only two of them made it.
Yeah,
The other three were on the list at one point, and then just too many other matches came and pushed it away.
Gotcha.
So, overall, do you think that WrestleMania matches have a higher...
Yeah, I mean, going kind of match by match, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
In these cases, probably not a hard and fast rule for
all
matchups, but... These, I think, overall, the WrestleMania matches were better.
Yeah.
Better quality. Yeah, panache. There's just a lot of weird stuff, like especially like the Edge thing did not make any sense to me. So that kind of knocks it right down. That knocks that
and
down
I
for me.
I do think that, for the most part, the WrestleMania matches try to be more self-contained.
That's true.
One-time story.
Because they're going to have people that are just watching WrestleMania.
Right, whereas a lot of these matches, sometimes they know it's just part of the story, not the whole...
It's just the nerds at home watching that one.
Right,
every week.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people watch Survivor Series.
That's...
But yeah, I agree. I think that's kind of something that they try to do, at least tried to do. Now it's kind of everything's always going on and nothing ever ends, and it's always Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, they got to kind of come up with something new.
Yeah.
I feel like because I only pay attention to these matches that were watched for the podcast, I'm not really up on like what's happening currently in WWE.
Not too much.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like we watch more NXT than WWE right now.
I definitely do, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like on USA, they were re-airing War Games that we went to, so that was nice.
Yep.
Came in, I was like, we were there.
We were there.
Okay, do you want to try and go through these five and their order, like within the week?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I guess it's kind of moot now.
Yeah, I think we kind of did that. Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense to compare these. It makes more sense to compare them to the WrestleMania counterparts.
Right, than against each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's... I would say the ladder matches the top of them.
Yeah, I think so.
Everything else is kind of
fine
underneath it.
Right. No, yeah, Shawn Michaels is very versatile.
Yep.
Like I said, we've been watching a lot of his matches. I'm starting to recognize the young Shawn Michaels, the really long mullet, the older, more Christian-y one.
Yeah, the balding Shawn Michaels.
Yes. So, no, that's good.
All right, yeah. So, I think that's all we have this week. Next week, we'll get into the Royal Rumbles.
Yep. Wait, are there any Rumbles on your list?
Yep.
Okay, don't tell me.
No, I'm not going to tell you how many or which ones made it, but obviously the ones that we're watching are...
And
some of the top ones.
Well, yeah, I think the one that we just watched is going to be probably high on everyone's list.
Yeah, I would hope so.
So,
all right. Good. That's all we've got.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy WrestleMania.
Why do you keep saying happy WrestleMania? That's not
until
April.
By the time this year's, it'll be around there.
Oh, okay.
We're on the delayed schedule.
I gotcha. Just say happy. Well, Royal Rumble is next from our recording time, right?
Yeah.
It's in January.
Yeah, but when things are released.
Okay. No, I understand that.
Yes. This isn't live.
No. Oh, yeah, we'd be in trouble if this was live.
It's not live.
We'd have zero listeners. Well, anyways.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
Is on top. There's a new gun in town. I made a vow to become a law enforcement officer. See these handcuffs right here? They're an instrument of justice. The big boss man is law, order, and justice of the World Wrestling Federation. Who will survive? Like the mighty